That's Jack Del Rio after he went in and stomped his former team, the Jaguars, and then he said nice things about Jacksonville, which, let's be honest, was probably more challenging than the actual football game in itself. As the Oakland Raiders, now check this out, we're not even halfway through the season, and here's what Raider fans can be happy about. They've guaranteed themselves no worse than a 500 record on the road. That's number one. Number two, they had the fifth best record in the NFL. Number three, they are currently right now the two seed in the AFC. They have the second best record behind New England. That's pretty silly. Now, granted, they've played seven games. They haven't had their bye yet. That's coming up. But here you go. It's one of those things where so many people are talking about the Raiders moving. Well, if I'm a Raider fan, now maybe I get why they want them to move so much, because they can play really well everywhere but Oakland. They're 4-0 on the road. They're 1-2 at home. So there you go. It was a great game for the Raiders. They look good on pretty much all levels. We asked the question earlier, was this the Raider defense stepping up? Or was this Jacksonville just sucking? They are two off. Jacksonville was their season low. It's not like they've been a juggernaut, but the lowest they were held was 14 points earlier. The Raiders hold them to 16. Second time, I think they had 17 last week, and their one-point win was, say, over the Bears, I think. So hell of a game for the Raiders. There you go, 4-0. Now they go into Tampa Bay. And if they go in and beat Tampa Bay on the road and they come back from Florida – winning both these games. Now all of a sudden you're sitting there, they're in first place right now ahead of the Chiefs and Broncos, both tied at 4-2. They're sitting at 6-2 halfway through the season. That's probably exceeding most people's expectations.
Yeah, I'm just not betting against them anymore. I mean, immediately regretting that, I thought the defense stepped up huge. I do give them plenty of credit. And I mean, there were opportunities there for Jacksonville that they didn't take advantage of.
Yes.
But pass rush was on it.
Katie?
In terms of, am I shocked?
Yeah.
No, I'm not shocked. They've played better on the road. I don't think Jacksonville is a very good team. I think I have to agree. I said earlier, like defensively, the biggest question mark for this team was defensively, and that was really in the first 2-3 weeks of the season. But we talked a lot about it at that point. Each week, the defense gets better to me. They make improvements. Now, granted, I think the secondary is probably their biggest question mark in terms of how they're able to really perform game in and game out. But a lot of it early on looked like communication issues. Have they figured that out? It looks like they're getting better, but I still don't have a lot of faith in it. Let's talk about when they play some serious teams that have some, you know, really big deep threats.
Well, and that's coming up here in just a second. Yeah. Well, we'll tell you about the rest of their schedule right now. Here's what you missed in the first hour. More of that coming up at khtk.com, including, both hours here. I'm sorry. I'm searching for something while I'm talking. That's why I sounded stupider than usual.
We are going to have more than 1 hour today, and it will be posted online. That's a fact.
You know, you're damned right. Mm-hmm. What I was trying to look at is with the Raiders, and somebody said on the text line, I think it's a valid point, that, yes, the Raiders are 5-2. But the Raiders have also had a weak schedule.
It doesn't matter to me.
You play the schedule in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's fair to say that after they play the Buccaneers, that's the halfway point. We're coming up on halftime here of the NFL season. They have two losses. Both are at home to the Falcons and the Chiefs. And guess what? Shockingly, the Falcons are all of a sudden not looking like the world beaters they were 2 weeks ago. And the Chiefs, actually, probably the best team they've played so far. The Saints are not good. The Titans are not good. The Ravens absolutely suck. The Chargers might be their second-best win on that schedule, and then they went and beat the Jags. Now, you play the Buccaneers, and I don't even know who the hell the Buccaneers are. I don't. Yesterday, they didn't tell me anything. They played the 49ers. You and I look good. The three of us look good lining up against the Niners. But then after that, you come off that, they don't even have the bye before the bye. You've got home against Denver. I think that's going to tell a big story about the Oakland Raiders, is when they play the Broncos. You get the bye, and then they go home Texans, home Panthers, home Bills, at Chiefs, at Chargers, home Colts at Broncos. That's a tough second half of the schedule.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's where we're going to learn whether or not this team is truly, I don't know about title contender, but truly a contender, an AFC championship team contender?
Do you want to
game?
Yeah.
Do you want to look at it in the sense that it is. You don't control the schedule. It might be a little bit weaker schedule, but with the number of injuries that are just popping up all over the NFL, wouldn't you rather get your weaker schedule out of the way early? Because by the time you're in the difficult part of it, you're probably also going to have some injuries in your favor against other teams, you know?
I mean, they're doing the right. You want to stack up wins while it is easy.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point. But, you know, you talk about them being a championship contender. I guess that to me is the only argument you're making when you talk about a weak schedule, is that, like, how is that really going to affect them if they keep stacking up wins? What, when they get into the playoffs and lose to a superior team? I mean, that's life, right? Do we think that they are the best team in the AFC? No. But keep piling up wins right now, get to the playoffs, and see if you can't get lucky.
Yeah.
Four down territory next on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK.
The Carr to Crabtree connection on the Oakland Raiders radio network. Guys, what impressed you the most from the Raider win in Jacksonville?
Good teams have a certain air about them. And one thing that good teams do, we've talked about this before, losing teams find a way to lose, winning teams find a way to win. Well, not only did the Raiders get some breaks like Marquette King's 97-billion-yard run for a first down on a drop punt, but what I really liked about this is that the Raiders were up 20-6 at the half, and there was never really a scare in this game. They kept their foot on the neck. They didn't let up. They didn't let the Jags back in it. This is a win from wire to wire for them, and those are on the road, and those are things you like to see.
We've talked about their defense, and it's I'm gaining more trust in them week in and week out, but I think the one thing that always sticks out to me is that Derek Carr is just impressive to me. Like, he is so steady, and he does such a good job of conducting that offense, and he never really feels the pressure. And I think that's kind of amazing to me at this point. He's still a young quarterback in this league.
Yeah, I was impressed with the way that they just handled their business. I mean, to me, it's going on the road, out of your time zone, it shouldn't be that easy. You know, whether Jacksonville's bad or not, and the Raiders, as you said, they led wire to wire. This was a piece of cake for them. They did what they needed to do.
Maybe a little bit of positivity for the Niners? No? All right, well, if the Niners...
The season's closer to being over. Yeah. There you go.
That's a good point. If the Niners lose at home to the Saints in 2 weeks, do they go 1-15?
Well, I'm looking at their schedule, and they still have the Dolphins, they have the Bears, they have the Rams. All of those you would think would be winnable games, except for all of them are on the road. And the one concern for me, we talked about it in the preseason, is that how is this defense going to be able to have energy in the fourth quarter, the way that Chip Kelly's offensive system works? And you know what? That's when they just fall to pieces, is the fourth quarter. I don't think they're going to win again.
Yeah, the Saints game seems like an arbitrary one to pick. They're not going to win again. I mean, when you see the way that they just collapse as a team, they're not good enough to compete for four quarters, and there's not a team in the NFL that's going to change that.
The 49ers are too stupid and inept to not win one more game, maybe two more. They'll win at least one, if not two more games this year because they're stupid, and they're going to try to win them. And they're going to tackle other teams that are probably turning it in at some point. And you're right.
You actually have a tear coming out of the side of your eye.
Yeah, I'm crying. Yeah. I'm crying here. I think you're both right. I put the Saints in there because, A, it's their next game after the bye, and, B, it's at home, and, C, the Saints aren't very good. But can you imagine Drew Brees carving up that defense?
They have a great offense, though.
Yes, they do.
That's
the thing. That's what I'm saying. That's why you look at that. The other three winnable games are all on the road, like you said. I just think they're too stupid. They'll end up losing they'll go from the number two pick in the draft to the number six pick in the draft at some point during the year just to get two meaningless wins.
Which is the better division top to bottom, the NFC East or the AFC West?
The NFC East is interesting because who'd have thunk it? All four teams are above 500. The Giants, Redskins are both tied at 4-3, the Eagles 4-2, and then the Dallas Cowboys at 5-1. So on spec, you kind of have to say the NFC East. But honestly, do we really think if the AFC West and the NFC East played a round robin that the AFC West wouldn't come out on top? I do think top to bottom, that's the best division in the league right now because in large part the San Diego Chargers, they're 3-4 and they're better than that 3-4. They've been hit with all kinds of injuries this year and they're just like yesterday. They finally found a way to win a game that they probably shouldn't have won. I think that's a strong-ass division.
I think that it's also the AFC West because Raiders, Chiefs, Broncos, all of those teams are phenomenal. The Chargers are the one question mark. However, their losses have been winnable games, games they were up in that they should have won, and they shot themselves in the foot over and over and over again.
Lost by six, lost by four, lost by one, lost by three. Those
like
are their four losses.
Plaxico Burress here, shooting themselves in the foot.
Wow.
Hey.
Wow.
It's the AFC West, guys, and it's not close. I mean, look at this for a second. You've got Andy Reid, who's a future Hall of Famer. You've got the defending Super Bowl champs. You've got Philip Rivers, who's a future Hall of Famer. Alex Smith and Derek Carr are both very good quarterbacks. As far as the NFC East goes, Jason Garrett, Doug Peterson's brand new. You got two rookie quarterbacks, Kirk Cousins and Jay Gruden. Seriously, guys, it's the AFC West.
You're going to drink an extra shot of Jameson tonight for using Andy Reid in your argument as positive.
I know.
Wild game last night, Sunday Night Football. Should the NFL go to college overtime rules?
Yes, please. God, I loved the game last night. I did. I loved the defense on defense. That was a blast. But there was garbage in that game. First off, that David Johnson play not being reviewed at the end when he hit the pylon was stupid. You had field goals being missed left and right. And I hate ties. It's like a damned shootout or something. College football rules, in case you're wondering, you probably aren't. If a game is tied after four quarters, the team will play extra periods until the game finds a victor. Each period consists of one possession for each team, the order of which is decided by a coin toss. Each drive starts at the defense's 25-yard line. If the teams remain tied at the end of a period, they play another, and starting in the third overtime, teams can no longer kick extra points. They must go for two after touchdowns. There's no lose here. It's awesome.
Yeah, so that's an obvious answer, but I'm going to one-up you and say that I think all games, whether college or NFL, should end when fans are no longer allowed to use the restroom.
Oh, that happened yesterday.
Nice.
That happened on Saturday.
Nate, I don't know if this is as cut and dry as I want it to be.
I would just make one tweak, and that's that you have to go for two all the time.
That would be nice.
No extra
wouldn't
points because it does. I mean, like,
well, especially after what happened in Arizona because they couldn't kick the ball.
Yeah, well, right? Well, in the Cal Oregon game on Saturday, I find myself getting to the end of college games that are shootouts and seeing overtime and kind of dreading it because I know that it could go on forever. So, Elf. You know, 2-point conversions every time, but yeah, we need to have winners.
We've got Lincoln Kennedy. He's a winner coming up next right here on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHTK. Want to remind you, Four Down Territory brought to you by Jersey Mike's, whether it's the original Italian, Jersey Shore's favorite, or Jersey Mike's famous Philly cheese steak. Their subs are served Mike's way, made fresh, cold, or grilled hot. Check out the grand opening of their new location, October 26th, Watt Avenue in the Arden Town Center, 7:34. Lincoln Kennedy coming up, and time to help fund scholarships for U.S. veterans. Donate to the Help a Hero program at a Sport Clips near you. Guys, this happened over the weekend, too. Ricky Williams, Earl Campbell, O.J. Simpson twice, and now Jay Ajayi. 200-yard games back-to-back. Only time it's ever happened. Hey, I'll tell you this much. There's one of the reasons why I'm actually really happy for Jay Ajayi. Our good friend, who we need to have back on again, Dave Richards, CBS Sports. This was his guy all summer long, all leading up to he was like, this is the biggest sleeper. Jay Ajayi is going to be amazing. You have to draft him. In the first couple games, he looked like a moron, and I saw him on Twitter getting a ton of garbage. Dave Richard hitched his wagon to Jay Ajayi back in July. And now he's looking pretty damn good. Another guy who looks damn
good
as well.
Meanwhile, Tajay Sharp is rotting on my bench.
Exactly.
Dave.
Lincoln Kennedy joining us. You can also hear him on The Nation with Grant Napier each and every week. But we get him on Mondays first. Hey, Link, how are you?
Good morning, everyone. How are you guys?
We're doing great. Want to remind everybody every week, Lincoln brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Check out those big, powerful coupons at JiffyLubeCA.com and get that car taken care of. Speaking of Carr, Lincoln, Derek Carr looked just fine in Jacksonville. And the question we've been wrestling with, did the Raider defense come through in holding Jacksonville just two off their season low, or did Jacksonville just suck? And you kind of got to pick one here.
Well, I'm going to take the first one. First
okay.
Choice, because it sounds better for the Raiders. look, I think this is one of the games where unanimously the Raiders need it, not only to boost their confidence, not only to help their fan base, but of course to further their desire to be a part of a playoff looking team. Now, it is what it is. Jacksonville's not a very good team. Let's just call it what it is. They've got their own fair share of issues. But even even some of the downtrodden teams that the Raiders have faced this year, it's never been a complete game. There's always been a phase that's led off. I mean, you know, prior to yesterday, the Raiders gave up at least 400 yards in every game they played in, even against some lesser, you know, worthy opponents, if you will. So I think it's good for the Raiders that they put a complete game together. Everything looked pretty good and came together. And of course, during their time, the team staying in Tampa, or not in Tampa, it's in Sarasota, they can hopefully use this as a bonding experience and even come closer together. I went into this road trip thinking they should win both games, Jacksonville and Tampa, you know, next week. And right now they've got one half of that done.
Lincoln, one of the big question marks for that defense has been, we've talked about it so much, their secondary. And I feel like the defense every week is making strides and they're getting better. And, of course, it has to do with strength of schedule and all of that. But how do you think that they've done in this matchup against the Jaguars in terms of their efficiency with their secondary?
A little bit better. The fact is, you know, when it comes – I know it's just people, they scratch their head when they hear it. There's a level of miscommunication amongst those guys in the secondary because the safeties want to help out versus the run, but the safeties also have to be in the middle of the field to prevent middle-of-the-field passes like posts and routes like that, deep digs, because the corners are anticipating the safeties to be in that position. So there's oftentimes a level of miscommunication that goes on. And even in pro day, you know, by pro standards, it's unacceptable. You compile that with the fact that you also have matchup issues. The fact you want to get Carl Joseph into the lineup, mm-hmm. which is fine, but you got to remember everybody in the National Football League seems to have a 6'7" tight end or 6'5" tight end, which proves a matchup problem for him. Now, yesterday, with Julian Thomas being down there, the former Denver Bronco, and now he's Jacksonville Jaguar, with him being on that team, there were times where the defense got exactly what they didn't want to see, and that was Joseph on Thomas. And Bortles couldn't complete the pass or couldn't complete it as consistent. So the quarterback struggled. You know, that's something that's not going to happen every week. So there are still issues they need to iron out. There are still issues that need to come together. I think what's, you know, the one true thing I take from the defense yesterday is that they were able to show a solid run defense, even though Jacksonville doesn't run the ball very well, and also, you know, come up with those plays in the passing game to negate any type of, you know, real challenge that Jacksonville could put together.
You know, Lincoln, you mentioned that the Jacksonville usually struggles to run the ball. They did have a couple of big plays yesterday, but how important was it for the Raiders to get out to an early lead and take that option away completely for Jacksonville?
Well, it's always important to try to make a team one-dimensional, and especially in the National Football League where everybody's got athletes, everybody, you know, it's got guys who are paid on the other side, so everybody pose a problem. You know, aside from a few breakdowns yesterday, the run defense did provide to be pretty stout. They controlled their gaps. They maintained their integrity. The guys who, you know, for the most part, who have outside force or outside containers, we like to call, did their jobs right. Now, there are still times where, as you mentioned, a couple of plays where it broke down and it wasn't there. And this is going to be something that's going to constantly plague them. I'm surprised Jacksonville didn't try to do more. If you look at the Kansas City film, to try to take that outside edge or try to get those outside corners on that defense. But you can best believe Tampa Bay and everybody else who's watching film or have the Raiders on the schedule are going to try it at least a lot more than Jacksonville did.
Tiffy Lou bringing us Lincoln Kennedy, as they do every week on The Drive. Lincoln, I want to go back to something you said in the very beginning, was the Raiders staying in Sarasota. And I'm guessing at some point during your career, there was a situation where you guys stayed on the road during.
Never.
Oh, really? Never.
Never. Never. You wouldn't put the group of guys I had. You would not leave them in a new city on the road with that much time. Never.
Well, that's kind of where I was going then. Then I'm sure you can kind of guess and extrapolate here, knowing the team. They're on the road. They're coming off a win. Then they're in Florida for the rest of the week. And on the surface, maybe you think, well, they're away from home, family. This is a long road trip. But, again, I want to build on what you said. There's a chance for not only these guys to bond, but stay away from all their distractions at home and just focus on pure football.
Yes, that's the plan.
Right.
look here, I have to be realistic, and you guys know me. I call it like I see it. I know that the teams that I played on would have never done well in these types of settings. I have a little bit more faith in these young men, mainly because being around them, they don't have the type of same type of attitude that me and my teammates had back in the day. And I think that's a good thing for this exercise, if you will, because I think it is an exercise. There have been very few people I've ever talked to who have done it. I had to go back to Coach Flores, who was a member of the AFL when they did it, you know, when they had the teams that sparse before the NFL days, and travel around. So I'm hoping for the best, and I think you will have the best out of these guys. I think they will see it as a business trip, seize it as a business trip, and put all their efforts into being, you know, for the most part, staying out of trouble.
Lincoln, how much of the Raiders' defense using their safeties to rush so much has to do with maybe the fact that Khalil Mack is off to such a slow start?
Well, you know, generally speaking, when you have to blitz, and they're not necessarily using their safeties to rush, but they're using their linebackers, you put your secondary on an island. I mean, it's man-on-man coverage. And there are times, if you look in multiple wide receiver looks, where a safety, you know, you bring in DJ Hayden to cover the third receiver. You might bring in, you know, you might have some sort of zone look when you have four receivers. But generally speaking, in most defenses by design, schematically, a strong safety is going to be responsible for the tight end. So, Carl Joseph is strong against the run, but he's not exactly very tall. Now, the problem that becomes is that if you get a taller tight end and you just throw a high ball to where the tight end can catch it, just like the one that went over Malcolm Smith, often the taller guy wins. It's just a simple equation in physics. You answer your question about Khalil. Khalil has been double teamed. You know, yesterday he got off to a slow start and then finally made an impact. That's the great thing about having a defense make the other team one-dimensional, because now guys like Bruce Irvin, Khalil Mack can just take back their ears and don't have to worry about the run because they know they're going to go after the passer.
You know, Lincoln, you talk about statistically a slow start for a guy like Khalil Mack, but he is getting a lot of attention from opposing offenses.
Yes.
Has he been able to impact the game in a way that doesn't show up on the stat sheet?
Well, anytime you can command a double team, yes, you can. Anytime, but then again, there are times where you're going to be singled up and you got to find a way to win. This defense is still trying to find its own, and what I mean by that is that they don't have a consistently good three technique on either side. So now you have to overload the box, whether you're playing five down linemen or if you're going with your 4-2 look, you got to have some production out of your defensive tackle, and it's been inconsistent. Stacey McGee, prior to yesterday, had a number of good games back-to-back, but unfortunately he left early in the game with an ankle injury. So, you know, the health in that interior defensive line has something that's hurt not only the Raiders' defense as far as their run stoppage and run fits, but more importantly, you know, freeing up a person like Khalil Mack.
Lincoln Kennedy joining us. Speaking of line, switching over to the offensive line, it seems like Jack Del Rio has a real asset in the left side of that line, Donald Penn, and then the free agent acquisition, Kelechi Asemele. You saw them a couple times yesterday. When they needed a few yards, when they needed something, they just stacked behind the two of those guys, and they just overpowered that Jacksonville line. How great is that, not only for a right-handed quarterback, but also for a coach to have that side of the line just so good?
Well, you know, much to your point, not only the left side played well, but I thought the right side. Now, Austin Howard, who played the week before in Kansas City, did not have a good game, had a good game yesterday,
yep.
A better game but yesterday, and I think that aids. I've always believed, especially with these guys up front, their best asset is what I call straight downhill blocking, where you're not trying to pull guys around, which we call bob blocking. You're not trying to get out of the perimeter. You're going straight downhill. Because they don't have a definitive tight end or a way to seal up the edges, this is their best opportunity. I saw those guys push around the opposing people, and that's what it is. Just come off, go forward, push around, and have, you know, Latavius Murray run between the tackles, between the edges, if you will. And I think that's a strong suit that they can build on. Another step in the right direction would be to take on Tampa Bay and be able to do the same thing. It's really gratifying as a former offensive lineman to watch a team like the Raiders be able to close out teams in the end. The Raiders throughout the season notoriously have been bad in the second half, or not as consistent in the second half, even with a 5-2 record now. But to be able to close out a game running the ball and pushing people, and when you get down inside the 20, inside the 10, pushing people into the end zone and rushing into the end zone, that's what I enjoy watching, and I had a fun time watching yesterday as well.
And Lincoln, and obviously this is near and dear to you, it's amazing to me with the amount of intelligent people that run NFL teams. I think a real fun and probably long project would be to try to find bad quarterbacks statistically behind really good offensive lines. It's amazing when teams figure out that if you spend money on the line, magically your running backs are going to look great, your quarterbacks are going to have career years, you're going to be able to control the clock. And you saw it with Seattle last night, for example, in Arizona. They've spent money on just about every part of that team but their offensive line. Why are there, and there's two great ones available right now in Staley and Joe Thomas, why is it that teams have it seemingly such a tough time making that connection between championship contention and offensive line?
Well, I think they believe in committing to the offensive line is boring.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the only way I know how to see it. I mean, honestly, they think that going after a star wide receiver or person who put a big, stats in college at quarterback is going to be your naysayer. But if you don't have protection, everybody knows it all starts up front. There has always been the basic formula for football. And that's why, you know, when I first picked up the phone and called you or talked to you guys, I heard you guys talk about the Miami running back who rushed for over 200 yards.
Yeah.
You know, you were speaking finally of them, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, what's coming around, the resurgence, though you see what in college, you see the spread and everything, you see some semblance of it in the pro level. But don't forget, guys, these things come in rotations. And eventually you will see a power running game, a commitment to running backs come back. Ezekiel Elliott, Dallas Cowboys, no one runs the ball more than them. Hey, they've got a winning record. You know what I mean? It's these types of formulas that prove, especially when the weather gets bad, prove the work. And everybody knows who knows football knows that it always starts up front.
Lincoln, David Amerson to me is a guy that has kind of surprised me. He's got 33 tackles. He's outperforming Sean Smith. Is he any bit of a surprise, or were they expecting this play from him this year?
No, I think they saw what he could do last year, and that's why they committed to him. And as well, they wanted to go out and get taller receivers. I mean, taller defensive backs, because they knew they were going to face a lot of tall receivers. And that's why, you know, even the commitment with Deshaun Smith, where the secondary is, it's pretty darn good. I think the times that Amerson has been beaten, again, there's been miscommunications. But Sean Smith definitely has to pick it up. He's on the hit list, if you will, because he got a large chunk of money in free agency.
Right.
So, and teams know how to go after him. Plus, you know, for the most part, sometimes the defenses that are called aren't really his cup of tea or strength. So his confidence has been hurt a little bit. He has to get back into the green.
Lincoln Kennedy joining us. Hey, Lincoln, maybe the play of the game. How genius was it for Jack Del Rio and that offensive team there to call for that Marquette King drop and then run? I mean, what an amazing play.
Just like you drew it up. You're going to have an overly consistent long snapper, one hop the ball to Marquette King.
Yeah.
Marquette, I want you to fake and give a very good, legitimate fake that you want to punt in and then take off for, 22, 24
yeah.
yards, whatever it was.
First down.
Yeah, exactly. First down. I mean, it's just like you drew it up. But there was no one who was even happier than Marquette. I mean, here's an athlete, a former wide receiver in college, that got a chance to show off his skills. And it's not every day that you have an athlete as capable as King take the ball and scurry outside when they had a punt block on and there would be absolutely nobody there for 25 yards.
Lincoln, that Sunday night game last night, I have to ask you about it. I thought it was a yawn fest. It's been like since 1972 or something crazy where there hasn't been a single touchdown scored in an NFL game. It ends in a tie. At what point does the NFL realize that maybe isn't good for football?
That's a good question. The problem ultimately becomes is, do you take the college rule?
Yes.
Play until it's decided?
Yes.
But if that's the case, you have to increase the roster because you'll have injuries pile up. You see what I'm saying?
I was wondering that, though, Lincoln, because I was wondering if the unions would get involved. But if you're playing, I mean, not in all cases, but like in the example for the tie last night, you're playing a full 15-minute quarter, right?
So that Seattle defense looked exhausted.
So are you gonna have – which overtime is going to be more plays? Is it going to be college overtime rules, or is it going to be your regular NFL overtime?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. You're going to have to add more players to even think about doing that. You know, that college, because let's face it, we've seen some college games go what, 3-4 overtime.
Yes, and it's awesome.
And of course, the NFL has taken somewhat of the approach. You've seen it gradually going in. That's going to happen overnight, but the rarity of a tie is still out there. And yes, I was traveling back from Jacksonville last night, so I didn't get to see the game. We just caught up with the stats, but I agree with you. It was a snooze fest. Anytime an NFL game, especially a Sunday night game, you've touted to be a must-see game, ends in 6-6 is not good for the NFL. Oh,
last thing for you, since we brought up college here, congratulations. We've been kind of following this all week long, or all year long, I should say. I think for the first time this year, we can say without a doubt that the Washington Huskies control their destiny. They finally do.
Yes, I agree with you. I agree with you. Ohio State dropping one to Penn State allowed the Huskies to move in there, and I still see a lot of big branding love, but it's well deserved. Michigan, obviously Alabama, but it's well deserved. And now Huskies need to stay the course. They've got three games that are still in their schedule that I worry about, other than the Pac-12 championship. Of course, starts this week in Utah. Then they've got Cal, and of course they got Wazoo at the end of the year. All road games, which there's a level of concern for me.
They're gonna be fired up in Pullman at that Apple Cup.
I hope so. I can't stand the Cougs. So I hope so.
Listen, no offense to anyone who lives. That is such a hole of a city. I've been there. Pullman. No, I'm just saying, I've been to Pullman. I've spent time in Pullman. It is such a hole. I've been to the
Cougs. You're trying to get on Lincoln's good side.
One is in Seattle.
Well, exactly how would you picture Pullman, Washington,
it's
Katie?
Horrible. You know what we did for fun in Pullman?
I've been to Pullman.
We went to Idaho.
Idiot.
That's what we did for fun in Pullman. Sorry. Sorry, Lincoln.
Very true. Apologize for me. There's no love lost. I can't stand Pullman. I can't stand. Look, I had the only time I lost to the Cougs was in Pullman in a snowstorm. When we had to play the Apple Cup over there. And I can honestly see a lot of that happening this year, too, with the way the weather patterns have been. So I'm concerned about it.
You have not experienced real depression unless you've stumbled out of the Coug in Pullman at 2:30 in the morning in about 38 degrees. Always a pleasure, Lincoln. And,
thanks, Lincoln.
We'll talk to you next week.
Pleasure's mine. Be well. Have a great week.
See you later. That's Lincoln Kennedy joining us. Sean Salisbury had to reschedule. As a matter of fact, Sean's got Salisbury stuff going on that he's got to deal with, whatever it may be. I don't know. So we got a full open segment
coming up,
as a matter of fact.
I know what
Start
I want to talk
calls
about.
Now.
All right, let's see. All right, what do you want to talk about, Katie?
I want to talk about what in the heck is Jeff Fisher and the Rams going to do in their bye week after Case Keenum threw 4 interceptions and stunk up the field in London.
Can we talk about that, Dave? I want to talk about the Rams.
All right, so Katie wants to talk about the Rams quarterback situation.
Let's do that.
Nate, what do you? You're getting. Oh my God! You're
I want to talk about that.
You're getting the glare I get.
Case Keenum, 4 interceptions.
She doesn't think you're being serious.
I don't think you're being serious.
I'm not being serious.
You're a mocking me,
Nate,
boy.
What do you want to talk about in the next segment?
I don't know.
He wants to talk about Miami's uniforms and how they need to change them.
That's right. There were 2 great
freaking
throwbacks
a.
yesterday.
You know what? Let's make it an all-request segment. Let's make it just like music radio. Let's make it an all-request segment. You can text us at 4411 because there's a lot of
stuff
on the table.
Or we
can
talk about the difference between how you and I feel about the Sunday night game. And how I think it was just boring, and you think it's a great throwback to the defense of the of yesteryear.
Of your, I believe is what I have.
Yesteryear.
Yesteryear. So we'll lead off with that. All right, we'll lead off with the
Why
argument.
I do everything you want to do.
You just brought it up. I just agreed.
I was being sarcastic.
I just agreed with what you said. And then 339-1140 or 44-1140, it's All Request Sports Radio. What will we talk about in the next segment?
Oh, geez.
After. And we'll talk about, you know what? I say we take the gloves off and let them request anything within reason.
Anything?
Okay.
Anything. Anything. What? Wait, what?
Sausage!
Anything they want us to talk about or weigh in with a hot take.
How about Ryan Lochte's perpetually 8-year-old puppy?
I'm glad
you
Nate's
familiar with that
not
one?
One of the texters, and
oh
no,
my
I'm
God.
Not. So we'll finish that story next right here on The Drive. It's 7:55, time to help fund scholarships for U.S. veterans. Donate to the Help a Hero program at a Sport Clips near you. Why was last night's game great, or did it suck? What is with Ryan Lochte's 8-year-old puppy? And your calls and texts on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK.